Blog Talk Radio.
It's easy to dismiss the charges of those who make claims of sexual harassment. I've heard the responses from those who have either never been a victim or have simply forgotten past incidences where they have either been a victim or a perpetrator. I don't believe them, they say, or why did they wait so long to bring charges to the guy? Or, it can't be true. Mr. X is such a nice guy. He wouldn't hurt a flea. These comments mount up to potential ammunition against the accuser and can often shut down a viable complaint before it's even uttered. Today's show will examine 15 credible reasons why women won't tell, and why too often the guy gets away scot-free because he knows the court of public opinion often swings in his favor. In this era of high-profile men losing their jobs, their status, and their reputation, too often it's the woman who suffers even more when she is compelled to keep her mouth shut. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thank you so much for listening today. Well, I know it's the holiday season. We are just days away from Christmas. Today is winter solstice, in fact, December 21st, and you're probably out busy gathering up your last-minute belongings so that you can enjoy Christmas with your family and friends. And we certainly say Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah that has just ended, and Happy Kwanzaa that will start on the 26th, and all of the other holidays that just happen to fall in December. We hope that you will enjoy your holidays. For some people, though, this may be a troubling time, and for some, it may have to do with sexual harassment and sexual abuse and assault as well. And maybe there are people in their lives, whether it's on the job or off the job in their family, who has caused the kind of harm that will keep women quiet and silent. Now, I teach this subject, and I know some of you are going to immediately say, well, what about the men? And statistics and data show that most of the abuse and the actions that are lead up to sexual harassment impact women, I would say probably 15 to 1, 20 to 1, just the data that I've seen and that I use in my courses. That is not to say that men also don't experience this, but by and large, these are issues dealing with women and their reaction thereof because of facing sexual harassment and sexual assault. So I'm hoping that today's show will be one where you'll pass this on to someone. Maybe someone who needs to hear this message, or someone who actually has been a perpetrator. We're hoping that this will educate and will teach people about the responses that people make and the decisions people make when they're faced with sexual harassment on the job or sexual assault, either on the job or elsewhere. And we certainly are seeing these titans of media, entertainment, journalism, and soon to be corporate America, who are dropping like flies, and certainly in Congress as well, because of allegations and many women who are coming up years later because of sexual harassment and sexual abuse and sexual assault. So check out some of my earlier shows. I've been talking about this topic now for about a month. And so you will have an opportunity to hear other solutions, why these things happen. And so you can listen to some of the earlier shows and find out more. And if you are listening to this archive elsewhere, you can always go to my website. That's carolcopelandthomas.com. That's C-A-R-O-L-E, copelandthomas.com. Go to the blog section, and you can see all of this spelled out, and you can share this information with others. Number one of the 15 is that women, they are vulnerable. They are vulnerable because of their age, because of their physical size, and because too often because of the level that they fall in on the job. So if you are just out of high school, if you are an intern, if you are just out of college or out of graduate school, you don't have money, you don't have position, and this is your very first, second, or third job, you are vulnerable in terms of the impact and how you are treated on in the workplace. And that often provides an opportunity for people, men in this case, to take advantage of you. So the vulnerability that you face because of your age, because of your set of circumstances, and because of the positioning that you find yourself in on the job can lead to incidences of sexual harassment. Now, number two is tied with number one. Number one, two, and three actually are tied together, and all of these are tied together, but particularly number one, two, and three. Number two is that they feel, the women feel, powerless. If you understand, study, and build your case about sexual harassment and just see what's going on in the workplace, entertainment especially, in Congress, it typically deals with power. Now, the byproduct of power is the sexual act itself, or touching or feeling, or the jokes that are told, or the hostile atmosphere. Those are the byproducts. Those are the things, often tangible, that are used in the accusation process. But ultimately, the bottom line deals with power. And again, if you're a young person, or if you're just returning to the workplace, or if this is a new job, or you need to keep your job, and you find that these circumstances are in place, and you don't know where to turn, or you don't have a strong human resource department who will stand up for your rights. Yes, I said it, and I work with human resources, so no disrespect, but if you have a human resource department who is not standing up for employee rights under these circumstances, then oftentimes you can feel powerless, that you don't have anywhere to go, you don't have anybody to talk to, and who will believe you anyway? So that's number two. And number three is tied in with number one and two, and that's they are afraid. There's a level of fear because of what has happened that then makes it very difficult to come forward and to tell what has happened to the proper authorities. The fear factor is very real. There are many cases where with sexual harassment, and particularly sexual assault with younger persons and younger women, have taken place. And number four is also part of this dynamic, is that they've been threatened. So again, the vulnerability, that's number one. Number two is feeling powerless. Number three is you are simply afraid. There's a fear factor. And number four, you have been threatened by your boss, your supervisor, the person who you thought was going to open doors for you and help you to get that entertainment career. And they've said, you better not talk. You better not say anything else. Now, we've just now heard with Selma Hayek, who is an actress, who has this really awful story about Harvey Weinstein, who's one of these big high rollers in entertainment, who has been very philanthropic, has helped movie stars to get ahead, but he's also been a very, very vicious person. And so as recent as the last week, she has come out saying that not only was he an abuser and a sexual harasser, but he threatened her. He threatened to kill her if she didn't do X, Y, Z. But with the various movie scenes that she was a part of and the entertainment that she was providing. So we have these cases where she's a grown woman, and this happened some time ago, but again, the whole sexual harassment, feeling threatened, and this whole fear factor, all of these go hand in hand. Number five is that it causes internal threats to your job security. So again, I'll paint the picture of a young person or someone who's just out of school, whether it's high school, college, graduation, vo-tech school, name the school that you are thinking of, and this is their very first work experience and they want to make it a go. Or maybe they didn't have a good experience at their last job and now they're in a new position and they really need to make this go because they have a mortgage to pay, they've got rent to pay, they have a car note to pay, whatever their financial responsibilities happen to be. They've got college debt that they've got to take care of and pay down on. But this incident now threatens their very job, that if they say something at all, they have no idea what's gonna happen. They don't know what's gonna happen. And so they're internally having this war that's where they're going back and forth saying, if I say something to human resources, you know, are they really gonna take me seriously? If I don't say something, this person is gonna just continue to do this over and over again. So again, because of the fear factor and the vulnerability, there may possibly, from their perspective, they may actually jeopardize losing their jobs. And then we know where that could end up. Now, number six is related to number five. And number six is there may be external threats to their job security. Perhaps that boss who has wanted to date Jane and has asked Jane 15 times to go out with him, and she has 15 times said, no, I already have a boyfriend. I don't want to date you because you're my boss. And then the boss, Mr. Jones, let's say, then says, if you don't date me, not only am I going to make your life miserable, I'm going to help you. I'm going to force you out of this company. So that's an external threat by the perpetrator that could be real, could be a mirage, but certainly weighs very heavy on this young woman who just wants to survive and navigate through the workplace and move on with her life. So that's an external threat by someone else, or it could be a supervisor, it could be a peer, it could be someone else in the organization who has been told to say this to this young woman. Number seven is the lingering question, am I to blame? Am I to blame? Did I cause this to happen to myself? Am I the one who wore an outfit that was so provocative that it caused my boss to ask me out for the 16th time, and I said, no, I have a boyfriend, and he's threatening me and making my life miserable? Or am I to blame because I told a very innocent joke, had nothing to do with sex, and that was then a lead on to someone in the workplace that I work with in my space now have a barrage of sexually explicit jokes that are just disgusting, awful, and I'm sick and tired of hearing about them. But did I cause this to happen? So women, and again, I'm a woman, so I'm just speaking from my perspective, way too often we take the blame for someone else's behavior. We do it innocently. It's a girl thing in too many instances. And when you're talking about sexual harassment, it can often lead us to think we were the one who caused this to happen because we wore this outfit, we wore our hair this way, maybe the neckline was a little lower than we normally did, or the hemline was a little shorter than it should have been, or whatever the excuses happen to be. And are we to blame? Or I stayed at work too late one night, and I was just being helpful, and I didn't know he was like this, and now I don't know what to say because I really should have left when everybody else left. So, again, the blame game can be a serious hindrance and a preventer that in many instances will cause a woman not to speak up and not to really stand up for herself. The next one is number eight, you may not be believed. Again, I just painted the picture of some of the comments and the ones that I had in the setup for the show. I've heard these things, you know, oh my goodness, it can't be true. Mr. Jones is such a nice guy. He wouldn't hurt a flea. Oh, and the most important one that I'm hearing now because of many people not understanding the difference between sexual harassment where these issues are dealt with in the company with human resources and the legal department and senior executives. Sexual harassment is a workplace issue. Sexual assault can become a criminal issue. You need to understand the differentiation between the two. And so often people will say, well, why didn't XYZ, why didn't Sally come up with this 20 years ago? Why didn't she do that? And there are a lot of reasons why people don't do that, because of the fear factor, because they felt powerless, because they were vulnerable. There was an internal threat to their job, an external threat to their job. All these things I've just talked about that will cause a woman to feel like she's not going to be believed if, in fact, she's held on to this secret for all these years. Everybody has secrets. I have secrets. And a lot of times you don't want your secrets to be outed, especially when it deals with sexual harassment or sexual assault. Or maybe it's somebody who is respected in the community. Or it's somebody who's respected in your family. And so how are they going to believe you, a young 18-year-old, versus someone who's 35 years old, has 5 degrees, and has made it in this world? Are you going to be believed? You may not be believed. Number 9 is the fear of retaliation, which goes hand in hand with number 4. They may feel threatened. And I just gave this case of Selma Hayek, who is the actress who worked under Harvey Weinstein. And according to her, when this incident took place, when she was involved with him business-wise, he threatened to kill her if she didn't do X, Y, and Z. So, again, that whole retaliation, what can happen in the workplace is I've just set up with a young woman who really needs this job. She has bills to pay, and she has the boss who's not really good, who is an abuser, and someone who is a bully, takes advantage of her and threatens to kill her job, to take money out of her paycheck, or to do things that will cause her harm from a workplace perspective. That fear of retaliation can be real or imagined, but when it's on your shoes and when you are facing these set of circumstances, and you don't know if the advice that you're getting is credible or not credible, these are the things that you need to be aware of, and there can be a real fear of retaliation.
You're listening to Focus on Empowerment by Carol Copeland Thomas.
So we move on with our list of 15. We've given you 9 so far, and number 10 is the fear of isolation by colleagues, friends, and family. You know, the workplace already can be dicey. It can be strategically quite a political chess game for anybody, just to succeed, to do well, to have friends, to have colleagues who respect you, etc. But when you put this layer of sexual harassment or sexual assault on top of having to navigate all of the dynamics of the workplace, it can be very, very difficult. And I always say in my workshops is that when you come out and you accuse Mr. Jones of trying to date you and 16 times approaching you, and you have told him 16 times that you already have a boyfriend, you may get just a range of comments such as, just go out with him once. It won't mean anything. It'll help you to move ahead. That could be one comment. Another comment was, he does that to everybody. Just pay him no mind. So you can get comments that can be a turnoff, and you can also say something, or you can come forward with your accusations and then be absolutely isolated by the people you go to lunch with your colleagues, even with family and friends who say, oh, my God, you're jeopardizing. That was a great – you worked so hard to get that job. Why can't you just be quiet, just move on, don't worry about it, or just go out with him once? Those kind of comments can be very troubling and telling about our society and how we dismiss these cases of sexual harassment and sexual assault. So this fear of being isolated by colleagues and friends and family can be real. People can avoid you at lunchtime. they can go the other way. I mean, I've had some of that kind of stuff to happen when I was in the workplace. They can do all kinds of things to give you the signal, don't come here. I'm not a boat rocker. I don't want to get involved in this. You did it. I don't want anything to do with it. So go in another direction. I'm going to be an arm's length friend at this point. So that whole fear, and that can be extremely difficult and demoralizing, particularly for a young woman who has come forth and stood up for her rights. Number 11 is they are not secure in understanding the company's sexual harassment policy. Now, I would dare wager a bet that in most workplaces, the treatment of sexual harassment from a policy perspective has been minimal. Maybe an online course. Maybe they give you the policy. They make you read it once a year. You sign off on it, and then you never hear about it again. But the significance and treating it as a serious matter can be measured, I think, accordingly, and can lead to a young woman not understanding what the company's sexual harassment policy happens to be. Or maybe she's been onboarded with a company, and that level of training won't be offered until next year. And the incident happens 3 months into the job, and you're not going to have sexual harassment training until November of next year. That kind of thing can happen and can impact a woman not saying anything because, again, she wants to keep her job. Number 12 is society will blame them, and they will be left holding the bag. Again, is it me? Am I to blame? Heretofore, a lot of people, we've had 25, 27 years now talking about Anita Hill and the case with Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, what happened to her during that time. Again, there was a delay, about a 7-year, 8-year delay between when the incidences of sexual harassment happened to her on the job and when he was being put through the Supreme Court and his hearings took place to clear him to become a Supreme Court justice. Very contentious time. I would encourage you to go back and look at some of the historical points that led to that very, very troubling time. I'll probably talk about that on another show. And I'm actually very happy that an organization I belong to is going to bring her in as a speaker in March. But again, what is society saying? What does society know about sexual harassment and sexual assault? And will the society view you as someone who egged somebody on or should keep your mouth shut? Now, I should also say that we are largely talking about these incidences in the United States. In some cases, in some countries, it can be much worse for women, much worse, where they have no support, where they have very little support, and legislatively, there's not a lot of support as this abuse goes forward on their jobs or certainly in their home or their communities. So we are talking about the U.S., and we are mindful that in other instances, in other countries, the circumstances and the aftermath can be significantly much worse for women. Number 13 is a lack of training, which goes hand in hand with number 11. If you're only having sexual harassment as needed or online, and I'm not bashing online training, but I just truly think that sexual harassment training should be done face-to-face. It's that important. It's that serious. And because of the legalities involved, it should be done in a cooperative nature, certainly led by your human resource department and taught by a qualified person, either an outside professional like me or internal professionals who understand and can run this kind of training program. And certainly law firms do it as well, but I think there should be a collaborative approach with the internal personnel HR department and the external professionals who are brought in to teach these cases, these courses. I've been in business 30 years. I said this online earlier that you think my phone will be ringing off the hook with all these high-profile cases that are taking place. It's not, because I know that in corporate America there is still a culture of silence, or there is a culture of we don't have a problem here, or there's a culture of, we've already done that, we already have our systems in place, and we're dealing with something else right now. Or, sadly, there are some organizations who just feel, well, if this takes place, if this happens, it's probably better and cheaper to pay the person off, pay the accuser off, than to get rid of this top salesperson who brings in money with our organization. Now, that is a serious, serious problem that unfortunately happens in some companies. You have a top salesperson who is really the abuser, and you have a secretary or, again, someone who is vulnerable, who is in a lesser position, who can be replaced, is expendable. You will hang on to the abuser because of the revenue that the abuser brings in, Matt Lauer, the abuser, and you will just totally dismiss and discount, or you'll pay off in Congress with journalism, pay off the accusers because it's from your headset, it's cheaper than this talent that you have who is also a revenue generator, a producer of money. Typically, the abuser can be a high-profile person who brings in a lot of money to the organization. So that can happen. So, again, all of this sort of fits in. So this lack of training. Number 14 is lack of confidence. This can kill your confidence. It can kill your self-esteem if something happens. Again, 16 times being just badgered. And you say, no, 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 I have a boyfriend, no, 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 and then you're physically threatened or your job security is threatened. This can really shrink your confidence. It takes a very bold, courageous woman to stand up and to say no. That's why Anita Hill is just, she's just a very courageous woman, because she put up with the abuse, the attacks, the scorn that came as a result of what she did testifying in a Senate hearing back in the 1990s. Do you have that kind of confidence to stand up on principle when you are right and you are telling the truth to move forward with the accusation? Well, number 15 is the last one, and that's the tendency to be risk averse. If you don't lock boats, if you don't make waves, if you just want to do your job, keep your head down, and move through the system, and something like this happens, and then you look at all 14 other segments, and you say, no, I can't go that route. I don't know what kind of support I will or will not get. It's just not worth it. And then what happens is you just keep going, keep your mouth shut, keep silent, and the perpetrator just does it over and over and over and over and over and over again and over and over again. That's what happens. So these are the 15 reasons, and I know that there are more, and I'd love to hear your responses to this. This is a blog posting on my website at tellcarole.com, TellCarole.com. Go to the December 21st section if you're listening to this elsewhere. And I'd love to hear your comments. I'd love to hear other reasons why women won't tell. This is an issue, and this is a societal piece that we need to push on. We've got to break through education, through telling people, no, this isn't the norm, this is not right, and empowering particularly women to stand up and say no, not to destroy people's career paths, that's not the point, but to stand up so that they can be verified and validated that the incident or the incidences that took place against them, they're not right, they shouldn't have happened, and they have a right to speak out. That is the point with sexual harassment, sexual assault, and recognizing that these things happen way too often and need to be stopped. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another show. Happy holidays to each and every one of you.